Zena.
And I'm Renee.
Welcome to When You Just Want a Glass of Wine, a podcast dedicated to making wine drinking more approachable and inclusive. Join us as we decode the language and unlock the customs of wine drinking. Cheers.
Cheers.
All right, we're going to get into that whole part about the extra dry means extra sweet and extra, yeah, that's going to be really good. So, okay. We ready for this one?
Let's go.
All right, let's talk about this. And welcome to this episode. Today we're going to do a few different things. We're going to decode a wine label. We're going to teach you about single varietals versus blends, and we're going to get some definitions on words that really confuse us. This is a light flight, so we're not going to get too geeky, right, Renee?
That's right. We're just like, these are things to empower you on ordering your wine and being more confident in ordering wine.
Yep. Eventually, we'll get down to the super geeky part, but we have today with us our really good friend, Andrew Stover, who's just done two What's in Renee's Glass with us. Andrew's a wonderful friend. He is my wine rep for Siema Wines. He is a sommelier. He has a sommelier diploma from the International Sommelier Guide and knows...
Guild.
Thank you. Thank you for correcting
me. I know. When you're... Yeah. If you can't...
It's you got to like get it right.
Tiny screen.
So we're going to start today about decoding a wine label. What we did is we took bottles of wine from... We have a French Champagne. We have an Austrian Gruner. We have a Long Island Chardonnay that's aged on seashells. We have a Brunello from Italy. We have a Rioja from Spain. And we have the Chateau Verdignon from France, because there are confusing labels here. So, Andrew, I think one of the things we'll talk about, because we always love to start with sparkling, is let's talk a little bit about a champagne label. Renee, what's the things on the champagne labels that confuse you or that you had to learn about?
One of the most confusing things is whether or not it's like dry. I like dry champagne. Mm-hmm. And I learned the hard way that extra dry does not mean dry.
It means the opposite.
And we're talking about real champagne.
Not sparkling.
You know, because I love this. You know, when I worked at the restaurant floor years ago, people would say, I want a glass of champagne. And then, you know.
They want Prosecco.
You pour them the $25 glass of champagne, and then they flip out when the bill comes.
Yeah.
Really, they just wanted the Prosecco
or the Cava.
The Cava. Whatever was, you know, not $25 a glass.
Right.
But yeah, so we're talking about real champagne.
Tell them what we have in front of us.
But also, you can apply some of these terms to other sparkling wines that are...
Made in the champagne.
Well, I mean, a lot of sparkling wines have some of these terms, whether or not they're from Champagne or what have you.
Okay.
So yeah.
So let's talk about brew versus extra brew, demi-sec.
Yeah.
Just give us a quick rundown on some of those things.
So on most sparkling wine labels, you're going to have, you know, the name of the producer, the alcohol, la da la. But when you want to know how sweet the sparkling wine might be, there is specific terms that denote the residual sugar that has been left or added during what we call dosage, and that's right before bottling. They might add a little bit of sugar. And you know the reason they do this, people are like, oh God, added sugar.
Yeah.
No, it's to soften the palate, because sparkling wines are sometimes made from pretty underripe grapes that are picked early to maintain freshness, acidity. And, you know, unless you want to be drinking like this really austere glass of acid, you might add a little sugar, because sugar counteracts acid to make the palate more amenable. Mm-hmm. Okay. So most sparkling wine, I don't know the percentage, but most sparkling wine that you are going to see is going to be labeled with the term brut.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is, I think, a weird word.
Yes.
Because I think of brut and I think brute.
Brute force.
Like, sorry, that's my brute force on the table. Like, we might spill a glass.
Wine glasses just went everywhere. Yeah.
Brute. Brute is a designation that would be dry. So that's kind of like your baseline. So then there are, and it's becoming very trendy now, to see more dry.
The brunature.
So you can go to, so brut, let's just say brut is kind of like the average. Like
basic dry champagne.
Basic. Like, hey, you like Cava, you like.
It's like under 10 milligrams.
You know, champagne, you like champagne, you like Moët Chandon, you like Vouflico, whatever. Like, it's mostly brut. And that's, generally speaking, what you're going to see on most labels. And so I just had to pull this up because I always forget the terms, because there's a lot of terms.
There's a lot of terms.
And I love it because it's
there
a chart.
There are rules in champagne.
There's a chart.
And they enforce
so it. So brut is dry. Extra brut is extra, more dry.
Is more dry.
And then you have brut zero.
Yeah.
Zero.
The brut nature. That's the same
or
thing,
brut
right?
nature if it's, yeah. you know, brut zero, that's bone dry, no sugar. Maybe
as
maybe
up
a
to
half
like
a gram.
Grams, yeah.
That's
I think it's up to two.
That's like, yeah.
I love a brut nature. We
actually, brut nature says 0 to 3.
Yeah.
2 to 3, yeah.
Yeah, so if you want to talk about grams of sugar per liter,
right.
0 to 3 is brut zero, brut nature. Then you have brut, extra brut, sorry. Extra brut is 0 to 6.
Yep.
So isn't that weird that you could be 0 grams and you could still be labeled extra brut?
Yeah.
And then brut is 0 to 12,
right.
which is weird.
And then it keeps going.
And then it keeps going. And this is where it gets confusing, and especially for people who don't know. And
now
you're going to see
because
this.
This is really
this,
confusing.
This part. You're going to see this a lot on Prosecco.
Right.
Extra dry.
Yes.
Yeah. And that what does that
and
mean?
And what does extra dry mean?
Extra dry means a little sweeter.
A little
sweeter. A little sweeter than brut. A little sweeter than dry.
Yeah.
Because.
The and it's could be shockingly.
Yes.
It can be shocking.
Yeah.
Like you get that Prosecco, and a lot of Prosecco is labeled extra dry, which I think is, it's actually unfair because we all think dry, like no sweetness, but it's extra dry. So you're thinking bone dry. No.
Yep.
It's a little sweeter.
Right. Yeah.
Extra. But you know, this is all French. So like in
so
the French,
the French are going to be.
The French like to confuse you.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and there's a champagne mafia. So apparently, I don't know. There's a whole thing.
And then, so after you go, so. Brut in the middle.
Right.
Extra dry. Then you get sec.
Which
means medium sweet.
Which is actually sec means dry. So
which is weird, really right? Confused. I know. I know.
Yep.
Yeah, if you speak French, sec is dry. It's medium sweet.
Yep.
That's 17 to 31 grams per liter.
But then it gets even more confusing because you go to
demi-sec.
Which you would think means demi, like half. Yeah. Demi-sec.
Half sweet.
But it actually
half
is sweeter.
Sweeter.
Yeah, it's even sweeter. Demi-sec. Yeah. You'll
or
see demi-sec
dry,
often. I mean, I think Moët Chandon makes
a Laurent
demi-sec.
Perrier, we have one here that
Laurent
we just
Perrier,
love.
Vuflico makes a demi-sec. Yeah. And then the last one, which I don't know if we'd see that on a lot of sparkling wines, but maybe Cremant de Loire, du.
Oh, the du, which means, literally means sweet. So that's the least confusing. Because
that one,
means,
yeah, if you know the word du.
So if you see D-O-U-X,
they say it
you
right?
know.
Du.
Yeah.
Du.
Yeah.
Du.
Yeah.
D-O-U-X.
Yeah. And that one is the least confusing because it literally means sweet. So that's a big one. We're not going to do too much more of a deep dive.
Looking, but yeah, but if you're looking for a dry champagne, look for the word brut.
Yeah.
Or
extra brut.
Or but just but it's going to have brut in it.
Yes.
Yeah, so for one of the bruts.
Brut nature,
actually,
extra brut, or
and if you want something,
good point.
And if you want something sweet, look for the letter S.
So, look for anything else.
Anything else, and you're going to get a little bit of sweet.
That's actually a really good hint.
Sec sweet. Yeah. There you go.
Sec
that's a good, you know.
That's sec. Yeah. S-E-C is what he's saying.
It's a good letter to think about, like sweet sec.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even
and
though.
And then what? We're not going to do a deep dive, but Andrew's holding a bottle of the Brumincourt Blanc de Blanc. Quickly do the difference between a Blanc de Blanc, a Blanc de Noir, so people can understand that.
So if you see Blanc de Blanc, I mean, do you know what Blanc means?
Yeah, white of whites.
White.
White of whites.
And they usually refer to it as the white of whites, meaning it's a white champagne made of white grapes.
Right. Which is Chardonnay.
Which, well, there's other grapes. Don't ask me what they are right now.
You know Meunier and
Chardonnay.
No. There's some weird white grapes.
You're talking about weird white grapes.
There are like 7 authorized champagne grapes, and some of them are white besides Chardonnay. And I think it's like Pinot Blanc. Oh, no, I don't know.
The primary one is going to be Chardonnay.
I got to look them up because you never see them.
Yeah.
And then if you see Blanc de Noir, that's a white of reds.
Well, Blanc de Noir is a white of black because they call them
white
black,
of black
grape or white grape.
They're black.
Exactly. White of black. You're right. So that would be a sparkling wine made from red or black grapes.
Right. And the primary one for champagne being Pinot Noir.
Pinot Noir or Pinot Meunier.
Yeah. Yeah. We just drank the Drapier yesterday, and it was just lovely. Yeah. So we're going to move on to one of our favorites. We've brought in here Steininger's Gruner. And what, Andrew, start with the top of an Austrian bottle of wine so people understand this part, because this is a great tip when you're looking for Austrian wine.
So if you're looking at Austrian wine on the top, whether it be in the screw top or the foil, you have the red and white Austrian flag. And only wines that adhere to their strict laws and have passed quality tasting panel get to put the flag on.
And this
top.
All came from like the mid-80s when there was
a
scandal.
There was a scandal in the 80s and
Yeah. So now that tells you, and that tells you a lot about, I think one hint that's really great for this, looking at it when it's an Austrian flag, and Andrew, get my side to this, but basically, if you're looking for a Riesling and you see an Austrian Riesling with the flag, you know that's going to be drier in general than a German Riesling.
That is true.
That's
In fact, I think Austria is one of the only countries that actually puts their flag on the top. I mean, you really need to Google this to see it. But it's quite striking, whether it's on the screw top or the foil.
Yeah.
It is a red and white, and not to be confused with Switzerland, by the way.
No.
But red and white flag of Austria. And that means that this wine
Photos of all these bottles up.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
So tell us, so you see a few things here. At this point, we have Steininger, Grüner Veltliner, Comte Tal. Talk a little bit about what some of those things you're looking at.
I mean, this is a very basic label. The brand is Steininger. The grape, if you're not familiar with the grape, it is Grüner Veltliner. Green Veltliner.
Yeah.
Comptel is the region where the wine is produced and grown. And then down at the bottom, Österreich, which is Austria.
Austria.
The German way of saying Austria.
Yeah. And what about on the back? Is there something you've got? You have a couple of different things?
It's not a lot on this label. Yep. Honestly, there's no tasting note. Oh, there is. It says certified sustainable.
There you go.
There is a certification in Austria that you can apply for, and it's very rigorous. There's also something else that I can't even read it because...
And it has the year, of course, on that.
Yeah, yeah, the vintage. Yeah.
So if it's alcohol,
the importer.
All those information.
But you know what? So I mean, you know, this is like you got to ask about this wine because there's no tasting note,
right?
You know, or you got to pull out your phone and like, what does it taste like?
Or you come to a little place because like
honestly,
Beauty and
like,
tell you all about it.
Yeah. Nothing on this label tells me what it's going to taste like unless you know the grape,
right?
And you know the region, what to expect. I mean, okay, it's a white wine.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, let's talk about the next one that has all of the information on this.
So
now, this
some
is fabulous.
Wineries, especially American wineries, because they understand that like
a lot of people
don't know.
Yeah.
Some wineries, and so this is from Bedell Cellars on Long Island.
Now, we did this in our Chardonnay tasting, our deep dive.
But we also have Maynard Keenan's wines from Arizona, the Merkin labels. He also does a tech sheet.
Yeah, we were tasting those on the weekend. It was so good.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you're looking at this label. It tells you everything you need to know.
So read through that. Tell us each label.
It says the name of the wine is Coquillage, which means seashell in French. You get the vintage year. It says 100% Chardonnay, aged on North Fork seashells.
Which makes this wine so good. It's just amazing.
Tells you the name of the winemaker, Marin Brennan. The volume is 750 milliliters. I mean, that's required by law. Right. And the alcohol is required by law.
And what's the alcohol? So you see 12.3%.
12.3,
what does that mean?
12.3% by volume. So in a hundred, in a liter, right?
Yeah,
I have to do the math on this.
I don't have to do it.
Well, just
in
general,
a liter, 12% of the wine by volume is alcohol.
It's not a big alcohol.
Right, so it's not a big
it's not a huge alcohol.
Like 14, 15%
it's
up there.
It's moderate, normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
12. I think, I mean, crazy. If you get under 13% alcohol in a wine today, I think that, you know, under 13 is great.
Yeah.
You know.
Because why? Because of the taste?
It's the drinkability and how many glasses you can have, really.
There you go.
It's nothing. Exactly. Yes, alcohol adds to like the texture. Sometimes you can taste the heat of alcohol. But like I get excited about it under 13 because in a warming world where grapes are riper and there's more sugar, that means more alcohol.
Right.
Because alcohol level of a wine is directly related to how much sugar is in the grapes at the picking.
Right.
So if you have riper grapes because of a warmer climate, you're going to have a higher alcohol. I mean, look, Paso Robles, I've had 16% alcohol wines.
Right.
Oh, I mean, you might as well be drinking a glass of port or sherry, but it's not. It's dry wine.
And you're going to have less acid. You're going to have less.
Yeah, and they're not less enjoyable. And that's another conversation, but yeah.
So now we're going to go into an Italian wine. Now, Italian wines, when we sell Italian wines at Beauty, I actually put the grape on it because people hear Brunello,
they don't know.
Barolo. They don't really know. And Italian wines can be very, very complicated. So, Andrew, let's start. Why don't you read off the label and then start telling us a little bit about it?
Okay, so this one is labeled Brunello di Montalcino. Denominazione di origine controllata e garantita.
Which tells you a lot, actually.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is a DOCG, we would say. Yes. Hopefully, how was my pronunciation?
You did okay. You did okay. Yeah. Thank God we had a little wine to start. And the year, right? So.
And the year, and the 2020 vintage. And then the producer, Pinino. And then it says it was, you know, 1874. That's the year of founding, you can imagine.
Founding of the
grape. Right. So talk a little bit. What does that actually tell us? How do we know what grape it is? How do we know that it's a good bottle?
Brunello di Montalcino is a type of wine. It is a mandated by law type of wine that you have to make it with certain varieties.
It has to be aged
a certain way. And it has to be grown in a certain geographical district.
Right. And that's
Brunello is not the grape. And this is where it gets really confusing with European wines. And, you know, it runs the gamut. I mean, you've got the same thing in Spain and
France.
France is very notorious. And Italy, where you get a type of wine that is geographically controlled and mandated by laws that you can only make it this way.
Yep. And this is a Sangiovese grape. Are all Brunello
Sangiovese? This is Sangiovese Grosso.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so there's two clones of Sangiovese. There's probably more. Sangiovese Grosso is a larger clone. It's usually found in this area of around Montalcino. And this is the top wine.
So you can have a Brunello that's not a Brunello Montalcino. You could just find a Brunello.
No one else is allowed to use the Brunello on the label unless you're in Even if you're in Montalcino, because this winery Pinino makes two wines, this is the Brunello, and then there's the Rosso di Montalcino, which is like, we call it the baby Brunello.
Baby Brunellos, yeah.
Because same region, same vineyards, same grape, but less aging. I don't know where this term Brunello comes from. There's some historical thing, and you know what? Your mind can only remember so many things.
And especially with Italian wines.
Yeah.
This is why it's expensive. People are like, why is this wine expensive? Because of all the rules.
Generally speaking, it has to be, I think 5 years. I got to Google it because it gets complicated because each of these different wines, like Brunello, and then you got Rioja over here on this next wine.
Yeah.
They all have different aging requirements years.
They have different quality control requirements. They have different things that you have to comply
and
with.
And how many years before you can sell it?
And then that wine is a 2020. It's a Brunello. Right. That tells you how many years can I age that based on all the things you gave us?
This is a real crapshoot with aging of wine. And by the way, when we're talking about aging of wine, you need to have a temperature control, and I'm not talking about, it's a 70 degree room in my house.
Dark.
We're talking a dark, think about an unfinished root cellar in the UK, under your house, like crazy staircase that you don't want to go down. A root cellar, unfinished, dirt floors, stays humid, stays cool.
Yep.
That's proper aging.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Now, or you get, a wine fridge,
like we have,
or you make a wine room with a portable, you know, you can get
a bit of fire and different things like that.
Yeah.
So how long would I hold that?
Brunellos can go 10, 15, 20 years. Yeah. I mean, it really depends on the vintage.
As we learned from Nick, the average American ages their wine 43 minutes.
That's out there in the.
You can, and like you got like the lay down wines, and a lot of times like the smaller producers, in the U.S. I know will tell you. You could drink it now, or you can drink it in this, and they'll give you that information as well.
I think also Pinino is owned by the Ferragamos, which is really exciting.
Yes.
It's a luxury wine, not LVMH, but Ferragamo. Yeah. And they just acquired this property, and they probably have on their tech sheet, I have to look it up, but probably give you a window.
Yep.
I will say it's drinking wonderfully now. I had it recently with my friend Jeremy, who's at Osteria Mozza, Georgetown. It's very nice. It's a very feminine style of Brunello, which is really nice because it drinks good now.
What does that mean?
There you go.
What do you mean? I didn't know this either, but Jeremy taught me this. Brunello, the region, it kind of has a north and south part. And so if you're on the northern part, it's a little cooler, a little hillier. And the wines are a little more feminine, meaning they're not as burly and masculine and muscular as the southern Brunello, area of the region. And so this wine comes across kind of floral, softer, not as aggressive as some Brunellos. Okay. And his point to that was that I think most clients, hey, you know Brunello, you think you know Brunello, right? That's what it is. You go in, I want a Brunello. In the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And Jeremy has to know that if it's a softer style or right. if it's a masculine style, so he can recommend correctly.
And how it's right. going to pair
because
with their
food. If you're expecting the big steakhouse Brunello, this one might not be your thing.
So like it's similar to some of the cabs out in California, big masculine stuff.
Yeah, like this, the valley floor stuff, bigger and masculine. You get some mountain, you know, hillside fruit, like a little more, you know, elegant.
Select. Yeah.
Yeah, delicate. This is a very delicate, I mean.
For Brunello.
Right. It's very delicate.
Yeah. All right, let's move over to, we have a Spanish wine.
Yep.
Let's move over to that. What is that label? Read that out and what does that tell you?
So this is, it says Bodega Sandare. Bodegas is a term in Spanish for winery. Andare is the name. And then you see it again, Andare.
Yeah.
This is a Reserva 2019, and then it says Rioja, Denominación de Origen Calificada.
All right, that tells you a lot, too, right there in the
table. Well, the region is Rioja, mm-hmm. so you'd need to know first and foremost that that is a, you know, geographic region
right.
in north central Spain. The Denominación de Origen Calificada, that's a level of quality. And that's, you know, I didn't say that with this over here with the Brunello. DOCG.
Right.
It is a top level of quality.
Right.
It is like the top echelon of their quality wine law. And DOC is almost a top. I mean, almost. Spain has... is this DOCA? I don't know. They keep changing stuff, and it's hard to keep up. But
it's okay. But
yeah, it's a wine quality level. So what this is this is Rioja.
And what kind of region is Rioja? What does that tell us?
You have to know a little bit about the region, right? And this is where it gets complicated. And on the back label, it doesn't tell you what the grapes are, how it tastes, or anything.
And Rioja, people love Rioja wine. You love a Rioja.
I do love a Rioja.
You know, I people think Rioja is a grape. It's not a grape.
Yeah.
It is a place. People think Brunello is a...
grapes that are associated with Rioja.
Yeah. Right. And there are grapes that are associated with Rioja. And the most important grape in Rioja is Tempranillo. With the side kicks of Masuelo, which is also known as Carignan,
yes.
and Graziano, which, you know, can be... And there's some other random sidekicks, too, that can sometimes be blended in. But for all intents and purposes... You have three grapes, Tempranillo being the most important. So the Reserva is telling you that this is a specific quality level that adheres to being labeled Reserva. There's also
Gran Reserva,
which is even more aging. It's all based on aging.
It's based on aging.
Yes. Is there one up top of that, or is Gran Reserva the top?
As far as I know, Gran Reserva is the top, but there's one below Reserva. And that's Crianza.
Yep.
And then there's something new that they've come up with that I don't know if they're allowed to put this on the label, but semi-Crianza, which is like, and it's all based on aging.
Right.
This is all about the aging in the barrels and also in the bottle before it's sold.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to a label when you look at it. So let's take this one is kind of the most interesting. We just did a little what's in Renee's glass with this.
Yeah.
And this is a fascinating one from France. And French wines, French wines come close to Italian wines sometimes for confusing people. People just think like Côte de Rhône or something like that. But let's read that label and tell us about that.
This one is the Chateau Verdignon Grand Vin de Bordeaux.
And what's that mean?
Great wine of Bordeaux.
Yes.
A lot of them say that.
Yeah.
I don't know what it
means. It's not one of the designations.
I don't know that it has any designation.
No.
And then it has a regional designation, O Medoc, and that's H-A-U-T. Yes. That means upper.
Yeah.
Yes,
upper Medoc.
O Medoc.
O Medoc.
and the vintage 2009. So it doesn't tell you anything. No. You just know it's a red wine because you can tell it's red and it says Bordeaux, yeah. Grand Vin de Bordeaux, Au Médoc.
It was a little difficult for us because yeah. we were doing the tasting. We yeah. knew it was Bordeaux grapes,
yep.
but it took us a while to get what the actual blend was, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc. And
4 minutes.
Yeah, 4 minutes.
So this is where some of these Bordeaux is kind of confusing because if it just says Bordeaux, it can just say Bordeaux.
Right.
Nothing more.
And what's that mean?
Well, that's just basic entry-level Bordeaux, and it could be from anywhere.
Anywhere in Bordeaux.
In the region where they're allowed to use the Bordeaux appellation by law. And, you know, you got to dig into it. You got to Google it.
How do you make sure you get a good bottle from there?
Well,
I mean, that was a good
one. You got to talk to people.
Yep.
You got to read because there's a lot of bad Bordeaux. I mean, this is true, but any region, there's a lot of bad wine from many regions. But, well, I will say, however, it is probably easier to pull a Bordeaux off the shelf today.
Right.
From a current release in the last 5 years, so 2020, because those are great vintages. So you're
yep.
most likely going to get something reasonably good because it's been dry, it's been warm, sometimes hot. Mm-hmm. It's
they're pulling Merlot.
Yeah.
They're planting.
Yeah, they're pulling the Merlot. I mean, that's another another podcast.
We have that Bordeaux Merlot that's absolutely delicious.
Malbec.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're starting to see Malbec now, 100% labeled yeah. Malbec. So, and you know what? That's a good example. I wish you had that one here, but we could talk about it. So we have another Bordeaux that, you know, pretend it's in front of me. It says Bordeaux, but it says the grape Malbec.
Yeah.
And that's, you will see that with a few forward-looking producers.
Yeah.
This is a very classic old-school producer, and sometimes that's what it is. Malbec, if it is a single varietal, it would only be labeled just Bordeaux right. if it's from Bordeaux. Yep. They can't use any other appellation. No. They can't call it Au Médoc Malbec. That doesn't work.
They're not allowed to use that.
The wine laws in Europe are very complicated. And it's not just wine. It's also cheese.
Yeah.
It's all
the things.
Different food, like meats.
But it's the more information, particularly on a French label, the more information you get typically means you're starting to go up in quality.
Yeah.
When they add more of the different things because they get those designations. But, right. you know, certainly my favorite winemaker originally thought that Château Neuf du Pape was a winery and then found out that no, in fact, it was a region.
It's a region.
But if you get a Château Beaucastel from Château Neuf du Pape, then right. you're awesome.
Yeah, right.
But that's exactly. where you get like the 100-point wines that then sell for $1 million a bottle. Like that, those top level Bordeaux are like extremely expensive, and they're now collectors. But I think frankly from people that don't even drink them, they're just commodities because they'll age for a really long time mm-hmm. and various things like that.
And we were talking a little bit to get Kiki for just about 1 minute. We were talking earlier between left bank and right bank, and what does that mean? And do you see it on the bottle or is
no.
that something?
Well,
that
it depends. So this label doesn't have any information on the back label, and that's the interesting thing about the back labels is the back label is usually on an imported wine. Well,
all of the American things that we
well, and also too on some American wines, if it has a back label, you'll see the Bedell does not. It's just all one piece. But the back label has required, there's government requirements to sell alcohol, and it has to conform to certain things. We're not going to go into all that, but they also could put a description and also tell you a little bit about the estate. And some, more forward-looking importers will ask for that to be included, and they will write that. I mean, I have written a number of back labels for some of the wines that we work with, descriptions, food pairings, things that are helpful
yes.
if you're standing in a store and there isn't someone to assist you and you're just looking at the wines.
Yep.
And yeah, you could put a description on these Bordeaux. So in Bordeaux, you have to know, you don't have to know it off the top of your head. You can Google, but to know which side of the river it is on, and that's where it's never going to say right bank
right.
or left bank.
Yeah, bank means the river bank.
Except unless there's a description on the back from the importer.
That'll tell you.
That would tell you this wine from the left bank, and it might even tell you the grapes that are involved. I mean, getting into the red tape. We don't have time.
But like one of the basic things is what? Is that the left bank is more, is Cabernet Sauvignon dominant?
Left bank is Cabernet Sauvignon dominant, correct?
And right bank is Merlot.
Is Merlot dominant, correct?
And the simple way to know that is you make an L with your left hand.
Oh, that was the trick.
And that's the C for Cabernet. That's what somebody taught me and I forgot that.
Oh, that's
right
a good
then.
One.
That's what I was doing.
I
it,
forgot
so.
You were said you, you
yeah,
were.
So I think we're, I think we're ready for some rapid fire on terms.
Okay.
Not associated with the bottles.
Yeah. Okay.
You'll hear people talking about
okay,
it.
Okay,
so
yeah, please.
We're going to shoot some out to you and just give us kind of a short description.
Okay.
Of what,
and if I demur, then we're gonna move on.
We're gonna move on, yeah.
All right, so
because I don't have all the answers.
Yeah. What's surly?
Surly is a French term which means over the lees. And then what are the lees? The lees are the spent yeast. Once the yeast have finished fermentation, they die. It's kind of a gross thought, but they're dead yeast. It's
that's why surly sounds much better.
Yes.
Right, and it is just a term that the winemaker left the lees, the sediment, the white sediment. It looks white. Sometimes you see it in bottles.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is beer. Beer too. Unfiltered beers are, yeah, are it with lees in them.
Yeah.
It just means that the winemaker has left the wine with the lees after fermentation, probably stirring it up, which is another term called batonnage.
Batonnage,
yeah,
yep.
To stir it up. And what that does is it... there's a breakdown. There's a chemical process that breaks down, and it adds texture.
You'll see Sauvignon Blanc surly. Champagne is
it adds texture. It softens the acidity in the wine.
It gives it a little texture, a little roundness.
Yeah, and sometimes it might add a little cheesy flavor, a waxy flavor, you know.
Okay, New World versus Old World. What is the difference in simple terms?
Well,
if you hear people talking about it.
I mean, a basic.
That's
is it. That Old World is all of the European countries that have been making wine for thousands of years.
Right.
You know, funny enough, Austria tends to want to be called New World, just as a caveat there.
Oh, that's
well, funny. You know,
kind of thumb
even though it is Old World,
the-
but they like to think of themselves as more New World because they're really pushing the boundaries after their big 1980s. You know, scandal.
Right.
They've had to reinvent their entire industry, and
they're looking forward to that.
Yeah, yeah.
So then the new world.
But the
be-
new world would be anywhere that is, you know, right, colonized by Europeans that, you know, started making wine with the arrival of those Europeans, generally speaking. Because
so Chile, right, South
Chile,
America.
All of South America, South America, US. Oceania, so New Zealand, Australia, yeah, South Africa,
us, the United,
the United States, Canada. Yeah. You know, I don't even know where we put it, Japan and China into. I guess that's New World because yeah, they're not a wine culture, right? They're sake and, you know,
they're getting
Aishu, and they've got their own.
China's the number one purchaser drink of wine. French wines.
All right,
I do know that. Yeah.
Here's
yeah
one that it's going to be difficult, but we're going to try to keep this one to a minute. You're going to love yeah how I'm going to put it to you. What is the main difference between organic, biodynamic, and natural? We're going to skip regenerative right now, but
oh my God,
people say to me all the time, because an orange wine doesn't necessarily mean it's an organic
no
wine.
No, a skin contact wine, right, an orange wine, an amber wine has nothing to do with being organic.
And yep, skin contact, tell a little like what that means, basically.
It's a white wine that has been macerated, soaked, the skins of the grapes, the green grapes that have been soaked with the juice. Right. Like you're making a red wine. Because, and this always, you know,
confuses people.
Well, I mean, I've done so many staff trainings in the past. Like, they think red wine is because the juice is red.
Yep.
And I have to tell them, well, you know what? 99% of grapes have white juice.
Yep.
And this color comes
it's
from
the color
soaking
the, skin
the skins of the grapes in the juice. And during the fermentation, you know, the little alcohol and the yeast, it leaches out pigments from the skins, and that's how you get red wine. To get orange wine, I mean, the grape's skins are green. It's not the skins necessarily that are adding the color. It's the process of soaking the skins, and usually it's done in an open top situation where you're getting oxidation. So any pigments that are coming out of the green skins are oxidizing and turning slightly orange.
Okay, so organic. What's a basic definition of an organic vineyard?
I mean, you know, there's... A certified I mean, we're going to talk about certification.
Right, right.
It's certification. A certification, and there are many companies that do it, bodies, different countries. Yeah, yeah. It's very red tape driven. You're not allowed to use any man-made products in your vineyard. And that's just, you know, no different than...
In the maintenance of the vineyard? Like
in the growing of the fruit, mm-hmm.
Correct. Basically, you don't spray pests. Yeah. Right. That's the principle. You don't spray
pests. But also, there are man-made... one of my favorites to talk about is something that we have to use here in the Mid-Atlantic. It's called fungicide. Right. Now, it's derived from mushrooms because, you know, we have all this technology and chemistry. And then we can take this compound. I don't know which fungus it is, but it doesn't matter. You can take a fungus compound that prevents other fungus from growing because it protects its food source. And you could spray it on your vines and no fungus will grow on your vines and your grapes. Yeah. But that's not organic because it was created by man.
Okay.
Even though it's not toxic per se.
Right.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Now, is biodynamic, that's the one where you bury the goat horn.
Witchcraft. I mean, you know what? Everybody laughs at me. I say it's witchcraft. Mm-hmm. Biodynamics is witchcraft. There's a whole book about it. Yeah, books about it. You do treatments. A lot of it's based on cycles of the moon. When you harvest, is it a fruit day? Is it a root day? I mean, yes, you bury cow horns filled with manure. You dig it up in the spring.
And you do a little dance.
And then no. You don't, well, yeah, probably do a little dance. But then you take the manure out of the horns, you mix it with water, and then you spray it on your vines. There's a lot of things. I mean, wow. Biodynamic is it's a holistic way of looking at the farm as its own
ecosystem,
right.
And is that the one that's going to, biodynamic, you're more likely to use wild yeast or only wild yeast?
Not necessarily. I mean, there are people that are not certified organic bio or anything, and they use wild yeast.
Well, yeah, but I mean, do you have to use wild yeast when you're being organic or biodynamic?
No, you do not.
Okay.
But you most likely will.
Most likely will.
I mean, a lot of it's just philosophy, right? It's philosophy. Taking care of the environment, taking care of the land.
All right, we got one more for you before we close this out. What are you looking at, Renee? What
do
you
think? You could do it. I can't read them from this angle.
I think that for our last question, what is the difference between the Champagne method and the Charmant method?
Oh, okay. Well, so, and you know what? You won't know because sometimes it doesn't say it on the bottle. But the traditional method, Champagne method, and then
Method
Champenois, or traditional method, and we cannot forget Method Ancestrale, or Method Ancestral. We have to bring that one up because there's really three.
Right.
Well, there's four. Let me go through them all. So Method Ancestral is considered Petit Natural. That's where you might see a cloudy sparkling. That is...
Is that like
and a bottle cap.
The Camusha one we have?
Yes. It might be bottled with a bottle cap, but sometimes, actually, Renee, they use crown caps. Closures, cork with closure, like a champagne cork. Yep. That is when you bottle the wine while it is still alive and fermenting, and you bottle it when it's almost finished consuming the sugar, the yeast consuming the sugar, and you cap it off, and any carbon dioxide would be trapped, and you might leave the yeast in there. The lees are in the bottle. It's cloudy. Okay. That's the old school.
Right.
Then you get a traditional method, which, of course, the Champenois kind of perfected, I'm assuming. Don't quote me at that. That is where we see a lot of Method Champenois, traditional method sparklings. This is when you do a second fermentation in the bottle. First fermentation might be done in stainless concrete and or a mix of oak, and it goes all the way to dry, no bubbles. Then you put the wine in a bottle. You put a small amount of yeast and extra sugar to entice a second fermentation.
Like Pac-Man. It just
Yeah. Second fermentation in the bottle, and it's also closed off with a crown cap at that time. Charmant is usually associated with Prosecco, but you know, a lot of other inexpensive sparkling wines also employ that method. That is a secondary fermentation in the tank, in a stainless steel tank that has pressurized capabilities. So you fill the tank. It might be the same tank. You had a fermentation going on. It went completely dry, no bubbles. Then you induce a second fermentation with yeast and sugar, and boom. So... Yeah. Then you have carbonation, which obviously we can kind of know what that is. That's like any sparkling wine that might be made in a Coca-Cola type situation where you're just adding the bubbles through, a stone. My friend they call it a stone. It's like a carbonation stone.
And that's why that'll be less expensive.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's your Cook's, that's your Wycliffe.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
That's your mimosa wine.
That's your cheap mimosa wine. That's your bottomless brunch wine usually. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. So, but what does it matter? It's, for me, I think the best way to like say why does it matter? I mean, whether I did bottle fermentation, tank fermentation, or carbonated it, it's about the longevity of the bubbles and the texture of the bubbles. So carbonated wines have really coarse, fat bubbles that aren't really integrated. They're not very dissolved. And so they don't stay carbonated very long. Prosecco, like Charmat method, they're a little more coarse. The best bubbles, the most fine bubbles, the most persistent bubbles, and the sparkling that you can open and leave for maybe 2 days if you don't shake it up too much, is the bottle fermented.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Andrew.
I know it's a lot.
We love that you gave us all of these descriptions. We're going to cheers off this episode. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And cheers to you.
Cheers to you. Great.
That was an amazing one.
Yep. Yeah.